September 7th, 1948.
Can you tell me about your family?
Well, well, my mom and dad ran a jewelry and music business. My dad was a watchmaker by trade, not just a watch repairman. He could actually make a watch from beginning to end. So my dad was a watchmaker, but and my mom's boyfriend, they had a local, well, they had a couple of them over the years. First, they had Logan Jewelry and Music Company, which was on, I guess it's on Baker Street, and then on Stratton Street. And when the coal mines mechanized in 58, that went out of business, and they moved over across the Stratton Street and opened up Diamond Jewelry and Music. And was there for a few years, and then lo and behold, my dad got called back in the Army during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and so he was gone for a year at the Fort Meade, Maryland during that time, and so they, that store went out of business, and my dad moved into a small watch repair shop where he sold records out of that watch repair shop, and he operated that until he retired. And, of course, my grandmother was Aunt Jenny Wilson, renowned folk artist and storyteller, and she got quite famous, I guess got famous in the late 50s, early 60s, she got some fame. How that whole thing started out, the principal of the grade school, Mrs. Batten, had to do a project. She was taking a Appalachian Studies class from Dr. Pat Gaynor from WVU. And so part of the class was they had to bring in a guest artist or something. So she knew that my grandmother had played the banjo and sang when she was much younger. So she asked her if she would come to that class for her. And of course she said yes. And she borrowed a banjo from, I think, from Howard McMillan. And so she borrowed a banjo and went to that class, and I mean, Dr. Gaynor just went, I mean, he just went nuts, you know. It's, oh, it's probably been looking for us, blah, 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 blah. So he started carrying her around from place to place, and so we ended up, she ended up playing lots of fairs and festivals, particularly Ripley, Mountain State Arts and Crafts Festival at Ripley. And of course, a lot of people got to see her there, and from that, it just kind of mushroomed. Of course, that was during the folk revival of the 60s, and so that was a popular kind of music for that time period. And of course, she fit right in because she was the real thing. You know, she had actually lived the things that she'd lived the music and lived the things that she was singing about. So that's what people were looking for at that time. And so we ended up, we traveled as far west as Denver, Colorado, and Texas. I don't know, you know, up and down the East Coast, you know, played a lot of fairs and festivals and that sort of thing. And of course, I started out just as a chauffeur, you know, I was just driving her around, and I didn't even play an instrument or anything. But they should have been after me. Now, I sang a lot when I was a kid. When I was a little kid, she had me here and there singing and that sort of thing. And so I think I was a sophomore in college, maybe. And my dad bought me a guitar for my birthday. And he played. Actually, he's a very good musician. He could play anything with strings on it, but he didn't because it calloused his fingers up, and it was hard for him to work on muscles. It was hard for him to hold tweezers and things, you know. So he didn't play, but he actually could play anything with strings on it. So he bought me a guitar for my birthday, and taught me three or four chords. And so from that, I could step after her on the banjo, and then I started singing with her, you know, and sang a few songs here and there. So that kind of took off. I was going to Marshall at the time, and so all of a sudden I was getting invited to parties, and then I got invited to spaghetti dinners and that kind of thing. And they said, yeah, we'll give you $50, you know, to come sing a few songs. And then from that, I was playing some shows, and from that it just kind of blossomed into a full time career for about 7 years, I guess. Yeah, now in the big stores they sold instruments. Don Logan's doing music, but when they moved over to Diamond's doing music, and of course in the watch shop he didn't have room for any instruments, so basically they just sold records.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and before Jenny Wilson was, quote, discovered, was she just play around the house, or did she play with him?
No, actually she went through well, she was in her late 60s when Pat Gaynor, was showing her off to everybody. And so I guess from about, I'm guessing from, it was probably a 35, 40-year period, but I don't think she played at all. At least I never knew of her playing the banjo, during that period of time. You know, I knew that she could, but I don't ever remember her having a banjo or playing or anything like that. During that whole period of time.
And when she started to play again, what song did she play? What was in her repertoire?
Oh, God. She did a lot of songs that up until that time, I don't think a lot of people had even heard them, but she did, traditional tunes, Cripple Creek, Fairwood Mountain, John Henry, John Hardy, all the kind of, traditional mountain banjo tunes, but then she did some other versions that I think were kind of unique. Johnson and Dixon and I Was Born in East Carolina, Canary Bird, some of those kind of things that were a little different versions than what people were used to hearing.
Write her own songs at all?
No, not that I'm aware of. She, my grandfather was killed in a slate fall at Peace Creek, and so she pretty much, her life pretty much centered around raising four kids by herself, and then of course she lost one of those children to spinal meningitis, I think, when he was about 8 years old. And so pretty much her life during that hiatus from music was pretty much trying to survive and trying to raise four kids. She lived on a widow's pension, which was, I think, $35 a month. And she took in washing and ironing, and my Aunt Virginia helped her. But they washed clothes for people and did ironing and things. So really didn't have much time to play much music during that time.
Mm-hmm. And that time early when she learned, do you know how that came about? Did she mention parents?
I know what she told me. She told me that she was raised with a bunch of brothers, and they all played music, and they told her that if she could learn to ride a horse, play the banjo, and I think play the banjo and something else, I don't remember what it was, that she could be a boy. And so she set up on that mission to learn those things, so she could be one of the boys, and evidently became pretty good at playing the banjo, because she was really sought after from what the stories are, she played a lot of square dances and that sort of stuff, when she was young, and then of course when she met her husband and got married and started raising kids, and she didn't play square dances and things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She was born and raised down what's now Chief Logan State Park, down what's called the Wolfpen Hollow. That's the right hand fork of what's now Chief Logan State Park.
What was it like traveling around with her?
There was never a dull moment. She had an opinion on everything, and she didn't care a bit to share that opinion with you. And you know, she had a huge following of at that time, the hippie type people, as she referred to them. And so she always had a comment about those kind of things. She got by with saying things on stage and all that sort of stuff that most people would have been less for. She, you know, she chain smoked right up until she died, lit one cigarette off the other one. Of course, if you were riding around in the truck, whatever, you had to have the windows down all the time. And I can remember us going to Texas. We picked up a 15-day tour, I think, through Louisiana and Texas in August, of all things. And we were playing some afternoon shows, and gosh, it was hot. And of course, she had to have the windows down. I was absolutely dying, you know. And she said, "Buddy, you know, this is the warmest I've been in years." You know, it was just something all the time.
She
was probably encountering other musicians too. She was probably meeting other musicians who were kind of doing the same circuit. Do you remember the folks that people you played with? Yeah,
well,
I mean, here in the state, we worked a lot with Frank Gore, Russell Flew Hardy, and, you know, we've played a lot of 4-H shows. At that time, the extension office, the WVU Extension Service and 4-H services was doing a lot in trying to document and preserve Appalachian culture of all kinds, not just the music, but the dance and the religion and all of the different studies, the language and the dialect and just the total social community of Appalachia at that time. They were trying to document that and trying to preserve it. So we worked a lot of shows doing that, and that was usually Dr. Gaynor showed up sometimes, Dr. Maurer from WVU, Jane and Frank George, Wylene Dial, and we did a lot of those things, and you know, it's really kind of rewarding because I see those shows and a lot of young people that were at those 4-H camps and I see them doing the music and I see them even telling the same stories and even cracking some of the same jokes and things. So I know that it had a positive impact and that those were outgrowths of those 4-H sessions that we all did. You know, Russell Flew Hardy, Frank George, Jane. guys like Glenn Smith, Jimmy Currents, Elmer Bird, stuff is going on and on. You know, there's a real close knit, you know, community. John and Dave Morris, you know, they played some of those things with us.
Do you see that community
still existing
today, or a different version of it?
Well, you know, a lot of those folks are no longer with us, you know, have died, but I still see that same impact, I see that same emphasis, I see the same influence that I think we had during that time. I know a lot of the artists that you hear now, you know, out there playing the circuits and things, I think we're influenced by that.
Tell me about your career in music when you were doing that as a full-time gig.
Well, you know, like I said, we were doing pretty much the traditional stuff, and then somehow I started writing songs, and some of those started getting a little bit of traction, and so I ended up with a country music career. So I was doing the folk, you know, traditional folk stuff with my grandmother, but I was also traveling to Nashville, Chicago, and doing a lot of country shows, opening for country stars, you know, here and there, and writing some country songs. Earl and Husky recorded "There Ain't Enough Whiskey in Tennessee to Drink the Ugly Off of You," one that I wrote, and of course the "Stomp the Floor Cold." Well, it's on iTunes now on Folkway Records. Yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, well, anyway, it's got a long bar. It's got the longest bar of anybody in that group, you know, so I'm kind of proud of that. But that song, you know, documented the nation's longest post project. I didn't really mean it to be a political piece. It was just meant to document the coal strike and about what the miners were going through during that winter with the coal strike. But anyway, so that countryside kind of took off too. So I was playing some road shows. And then in 76, 77, I was the artist in residence in Tucker County working in the school system. It just so happened that it was two big snow winters, and they didn't have school from like last November till first April or something. So I learned how to ski and ride snowmobiles and talk some guitar courses and that sort of stuff. But, well, I don't know. You know, we did some plays and that kind of stuff with the school system. It was very educational for me. It was a lot of fun. But anyway, I did that for 2 years. I think it was a program called Artists in the Classroom. It was with, as a matter of fact, it was with the Federal Endowment for the Arts and Humanities. So I did that for a couple of years before I moved back to Logan.
And then you took this job, or?
I did. I had an older daughter, which I missed a lot of her growing up because I was traveling around playing music. Most of the things that I knew how to do required travel, you know. So I missed a lot of her growing up, and so Cressy, my second daughter, was supposed to be born in November. So let me back up a minute. At one point I was trying to teach school, and I was trying to play music too, and I was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Like I was going somewhere every weekend playing music, and even trying to go on Wednesday night and maybe play a Wednesday night show somewhere. And I was teaching school full time, so I was late on Thursday, and that didn't make the principal very happy and all that sort of stuff. So I think I was 23, maybe. And I said, I'm going to play music on Thursday. And that still gives me 35 working years to put into something. Well, I actually did it while I was 31 because I was having a pretty good year. But anyway, Cressy was going to be born in November, so I didn't book any more shows past the 1st of November. And I started looking for a job, and there were two jobs in the paper. There was this job, the director of the ambulance service and county administrator. And so I applied for both of them and ended up in this job. And really, I was only going to do it for the winter until the construction job fired back up again. But I kind of got into it and got committed to it. And so I was only going to stay for the winter. It was 37 years ago. So I'm still here. Emma, really, you know, had no idea that it would take off like it did. My first year's budget was $35,000. I had to buy three ambulances, pay my salary and the secretary's salary out of that. This year we'll probably do about $8 million in tourist receipts. So we've really grown in 37 years.
Have you continued to play gigs?
Yeah, I mean, I do all that I have time for. I do Vandalia every year. You know, I try to do one every couple months or so, you know, nothing, that's really about all I've got time to do, you know, but yeah, I try to stay busy, and I do a lot of local stuff, you know, Chamber of Commerce and different civic groups and that sort of stuff. I do a lot of shows with them, so it gives me a chance to still perform a little bit and to do the songs. I won the Vandalia Award in 2014, so, you know. So, yeah, I kind of stay busy there.
Do you continue to play with people?
that's what I did most of the time. Now, you know, I had some, I worked with bands from time to time if the job paid enough that I could pay a band, you know, and I'd draw out the pieces that I needed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But really didn't make enough money to carry a band, you know.
Yeah.
You know, actually, the first album that I did, we did in a basement at Sutton, West Virginia. I'd met some friends of mine, they're still friends to this day, the Cochran family. And the Cochran family was a dynamic, I mean, they were just awesome bunch of young kids. I mean, Little John was a fiddler, I think he was 6 years old, and could just fiddle up a storm. The oldest one of the kids was, I think, 13, 14. And so anyway, we decided we were going to make an album together. And so we did the Roger Black Phonograph record in Bill Carpenter's basement. And of course, Bill did the dobro and he did the engineering and all that sort of stuff. That was the first one. And then when I finished the residency there, we did a country album in Nashville with really slick, you know, 18 pickers and that kind of stuff. That was done in Nashville. A guy named Jimmy Helms actually produced that album. And then I did On the Banks of the Old Guyan, which is a collection of songs that were indigenous to the Wyandotte River Basin. And David O'Dell produced that album and played a lot of the music on it. And then had parts of other albums, had part of the live at the Mountain State Arts and Crafts Fair with my grandmother. And then we did the Vandalia sampler with her, you know, just kind of parts of other albums. But those were the three main albums that we did.
What are most of your songs about?
Oh, gosh, life, things that are. Things that I've lived, things that I've experienced, or things that I imagined that I experienced, whether I could or not, you know. most of them are with country flavor, you know. The exception of that probably Stop the Flow of Coal, you know. The rest are country ballads or sometimes humorous, you know, have a little humor in them.
You still write songs?
I do. Occasionally, when I feel inspired, you know, I'm not one of those guys that sits down 8 to 5 and starts picking songs out. You know, I'll think about something for 2-3 months, but I'll sit down and write it in 20 minutes. You know, after I've thought about it over and over and over and over again. You know.
I'm
just trying to decide what direction I want to go. You know, I got 2 or 3 projects in mind that I'd like to do and who I'd like to do them with, you know. Just a matter of trying to decide. I mean, I'm not getting any younger if I'm going to do them. I'm going to have to do them pretty soon, you know.
What would you talk about them, or are they secret?
Well, they're not secret. I just don't have them formulated enough to really talk about them. You know, I mean, I've got some things that I've written that I've not recorded. You know, and I'd like to do those, but I'd really like to do a kind of a traditional country album. Not necessarily the things I've written, but just country standards, you know. I've always wanted to do that, and I've never had an opportunity, but I'd like to do that. And then, of course, you know, like I said, I've written some others. I don't have enough for an album yet, but I have written some pieces that I'm trying to record. I'd like to do an album just me and my friends that are left, because I'm losing every day, you know. Lost Jay Bob last year, and I regret that we didn't get to do a project together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd like to do a project with guys like Betty Griffin and Robert Schaefer and guys that I've worked with for years and years and years. You know, I'd like to do a project with them for a trip out.
Are there other young musicians or younger musicians in West Virginia who whose music you like?
Yeah, I like.
Yeah, who you see sort of taking on the new scene?
Yeah, you know, but most of them are not doing what I did. Jeff Ellis, you know, I like Jeff's stuff. You know, I think he's an up-and-coming guy with a lot of possibilities. Very versatile, very good writer, good musician, has a good, huh? I think he was in South Charleston, you know. But Jeff, I think, got a lot of talent. You know, in a lot of different ways. And of course, you know, guys are already famous. I mean, like Brad Paisley, I think he's the exception to the rule. You know, he's one of those guys that would make it no matter what. You know, when I was serious, you know, and I was hanging out in Nashville and I was doing, you know, things, I sit down and I graph. Yeah, I've always been kind of analytical. And I sat down and tried to find that roadmap, you know, so I graphed how each star made it to the top, you know, kind of. If I could find that common denominator, I'd just follow the roadmap, you know. Well, there was no common denominator, you know, I found out. It's almost like hitting the lottery. The one thing I did learn was that Pamela's only that much of it, you know. And I'll give you a couple of examples. One thing I learned playing road shows, and I don't mean this in a vain way, so don't take it wrong. I was usually more talented than whoever I was opening for, because I could at least tune my own guitar, you know. And in every town we played in, without exception, there was some 14-year-old kid that was just way better than anybody on the stage that was getting paid that night. So I learned from that talent really only about that much. I mean, having a national hit record is almost like hitting the lottery. I mean, the stars have to align. I mean, everything has to line up. But Brad Paisley's the exception to that rule, because Brad Paisley would make it in anybody's market, because he's the total package. You know, he's the only guitar picker that ever made the cover of Guitar Player magazine. Chet Atkins never made the cover. There are stories about Chet. And he's that good. He's that good of a guitar player. He can make it as a guitar player, even if he couldn't write songs and sing and do all the other stuff, you know. I mean, he's the whole package, you know. I mean, he can make it as a songwriter, even if he couldn't sing a lick. Because his songs are just so commercial. I mean, they're commercial as water. And he's got the stage presence, you know. He's got the whole package, you know. So he's up and coming. Kind of drawing a blank, because I know there's lots of young people out there that are really talented, just, you know.
What was the significance of the Vandalia Award for you?
Well, I mean, I mean, anytime you get recognized for, you know, a lifetime of achievements, it kind of validates what you hoped you were, you know. It's really kind of funny, because I never really took myself that seriously, even when I was trying to make a living. You know, it was still fun for me. It was something I did for fun. I never tried to take myself too seriously. And I think if you talk to people that know me, they would say, yeah, that's a fool. He never took himself serious enough, you know, really. But I think, I mean, it really meant a lot to me, you know, because it kind of validated that at least somebody else thought that I had made some contributions. And, you know, when you've done something as long as I've been playing music and stuff, you know, that kind of validation means a lot. tell you that it's more fun now than it was when I was trying to feed my kids.
Yeah.
When you're trying to feed your kids, you know, what's the old joke about what's the difference between a musician and a large pizza? A large pizza can feed a family of four, you know. when you're trying to put food on the table, it's a lot of pressure on you, you know. But it's the same no matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if you're playing music or what you're doing, you know. I mean, when your kids are looking to you for, you know, for survival, support, yeah, it puts pressure on. Now, it's much more fun playing music now than it was when I was trying to make a living.
Yeah.
You know.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it's been a great ride. Yeah, remember, I'm 50 years of doing this now, you know. And the one thing that I think is really, that I appreciate the most, is that music has given me a life that I would never have. It has allowed me to go places and meet people, some incredible people. I've met so many fantastic people. And I would not have met those people had it not been for the music. So it has afforded me going places and meeting people that have just meant so much to me during my life that I would never have met, you know, or never had a chance to go there had it not been for the music.
Are there any people you met who were particularly exciting for you or, important?
Well, I mean, the more significant people in my life were not the big stars or not the famous people that everybody would think that would come to mind. But, you know, and I don't want to mention one or two in particular because I don't want to slide anybody. But but I've met so many just fantastic people, you know, that were just so interesting, you know, that every one of them had a story to tell. And just so many characters, you know. Guys like Russ Bluehart or Frank George, I mean, those guys just really had an impact on my life, you know. And I could go on and on and on, but I don't want to slide into that, you know.
Yeah, I need to go talk to Frank. He's still around and forever.
Oh, yeah. Have you met Frank?
I haven't.
Oh, you got to do it. And you got to do it quick.
Yeah.
Frank and Jane can tell you more about the traditional scene in West Virginia than anybody I know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank, I mean, I dubbed him Music Man of the Mountains years ago, you know, because he can play all the mountain instruments and everything from bagpipe, tenor whistle, to fiddle, banjo, guitar, or anything, you know. And does them all. He's a master of all of them, you know.
Yeah, I've seen some photos of him in his kilt.
Yeah.
Frank.
Yeah, you definitely have to go meet Frank